everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and it's nice to welcome you once again. We are just outside the Kremlin, another magnificent day. Summers in Moscow are probably as beautiful as any place in the world, you know? And it's interesting, because I think one of the reasons that I wanted to be here on this day to talk about the particular subject that we're going to be talking about is the transformation that has taken place in this particular venue. What you see behind me is the Mac Daddy, right? But what you see behind me now is not what this place used to look like in the 1990s. In fact, I'll tell you, just from the stories and what I've been told by people here, Moscow in the 1990s was a dangerous place. Crime, gangsterism. And it had a lot to do with the fact that during that transformation, there were a lot of people from the West who were coming here to rip this place off. They were gonna take everything they could from this place. And that's a part of the story. In fact, Gene, if you could, show them what it's like there now. Because as you look at Moscow now and you see the people walking around, what do you see? You see families, you see people who come here because they just want to spend some time. This is like one of the most famous places for gathering places for the people of Russia. People from all over Russia come here just to be able to spend the day and enjoy themselves in this environment. But there was a time when it was nothing like that. And the reason is because a lot of people had come from the West and they knew that this was a brand new adventure. Come to Russia, take Russia's resources, do what you can with Russia. Take the countries that used to be friendly with Russia and make them now enemies of Russia. And that's that NATO expansion that you hear so much about, where NATO was coming up right to the borders of Russia. But then it all changed. And let me tell you what happened. The Russians saw this and said, "Nyet, enough. We just can't continue this way. What we have to do now is take Russia back for the Russians." Now, at the time, there were already a lot of Russians who had started to make money. Nothing wrong with that. Capitalism works. We all know that. Russia started to become more democratic, but they started thinking more about what is good for Russia. So all of a sudden, the same Westerners who loved Russia when Russia had its arms open and said, take anything you want, Russia now said, hold on a minute. You can't have all you want. And that's when the West started changing its tune. Throughout that environment, there was one guy in Russia. His name was Viktor Bout. He was a typical guy. He hustled like anybody else in a capitalist system. He was selling and he was buying and he was trying to make money. And then he got into arms sales. He was selling weapons. That's when the West looked at him and said, no, 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 no. We sell weapons. You don't sell weapons. Besides, you're a Russian. We don't like Russians anymore again. And that's when they turned him into a veritable legend. This guy is now famous worldwide. There's movies about him. There's books written about him. There's documentaries about him. Nicolas Cage played him. In fact, here's a snapshot of that.
Selling guns is like selling vacuum cleaners. You make calls, pound the pavement. I supply to every army but the Salvation Army.
One of the most dangerous men on the face of the earth.
One of the world's most infamous arms dealers, sentenced to 25 years imprisonment in 2012 for conspiring to sell tens of millions of dollars in weapons to be used against American citizens.
He provided arms to all parts of the world in contravention of international law.
Merchant of death, because he had all these military, a whole fleet of military Soviet aircraft.
This is the Lord of War, the Merchant of Death.
They make him out to be a monster. Is he? Well, he's here to speak for himself. He's good enough to join us. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to Viktor Bout. He's joining us now. He is now here once again in his motherland, and he is a very important political figure now in Russia. As a matter of fact, he's one of the leaders of the opposition party here in Russia. He is still, by the way, and this is important to note, he is still very much involved in geopolitics, was on with my friend Tucker Carlson recently, talks to people all over the world about what's really happening, not just in Russia, but in other countries. and he's good enough to join us. It is so great to see you. Thank you for being here
with us. Thank you for having me.
You look great.
Well, it's not forbidden, at least, you know, I'm not violating any laws, so it's in Russia you can be, you know.
What was it like? Good. What was it like to spend a lot of time in, I mean, you were in prison, and if you don't mind my saying, I've read your case, I've looked through it, and it looked to me like you were kind of railroaded. They created they created a situation for you, and I'll tell the audience what they did. They literally set agents pretending to be Colombian drug dealers into a meeting with him, and then they started saying, well, we want to kill Americans, and we want to get drugs, and he's just saying, well, listen, I'm just here to sell you weapons. But they made it look like you were seeking them out, when in fact they were seeking you out, right?
Well, the problem was I was not there to sell the weapons, I was selling the airplanes, and when they asked, well, we want to buy these weapons, they said, how much it cost? I said, I don't know, really. Uh-huh. Because this is where the entire story comes to the light. Because, look, according to American law, if you refuse three times, they need to seize this operation. Yeah. They keep pushing. They used one of the men I knew very well who used to work for me. They sent to me initially, like in December, saying, look, we have this one. They want to buy your airplanes. I said, okay, fine. What's going on? You know how to do it. You work for me. You know perfectly well how it works. Just sell them. Why you need me? I said, okay, everything is fine. They agreed. Just come, you know, on this meeting in Bangkok. So I have no any bad thought. So I jump in the plane, arriving there, and we start the meeting. I said, okay.
And you think you're just going to meet with some guys who want to buy some airplanes, and you're going to sell them airplanes?
Selling, okay.
They were really DEA agents?
Yeah.
DEA.
And they've been not...
Drug enforcement agents from the
correct.
United States.
They've not been Colombian. And funny part that afterwards, as usually, DEA throw them under the bus. They end up in a jail. And one of the mine, you know, cellmates ends up also with them and wrote the letter that they've been complaining how bad they've been treated by DEA.
Oh, because they were operatives. They weren't real agents.
No, they've been Mexican, I guess, and the Guatemalan who was, you know, arrested before for some drug smuggling. Then they agreed to cooperate. Then they used them. And not only on my
to case, pretend to be Colombians.
They've been like in a 12 operation. By the way, the same DA group who arrested me arrested exactly on the same charges. A year before, they arrested a very famous, really legal arms dealer, Munzer Alcazar, in Spain, and extradited him. Then arrested me. And after me was 12 cases. Exactly. You just changed the name. Everything was perfect. The same group, and the entire business was very simple. Each case like mine, because on the trial, on disclosure, this is a requirement according to the American law, at least in Southern District of New York, that you need to disclose how much finance you spent. And guess what? When the government brought a book and opened it, it was there $150 million spent to catch me. I said, what? Are you serious?
They spent $150 million?
So that's entire, the you know, like in America, everybody used to say follow the buck. If you follow the buck, it's all become clear.
Yes.
So this group was spending the money just for these two stooges, undercover agent. They pay each of them $8 million.
Oh,
and when they ask,
God.
Why so much? Well, because they've been risking their life going in the meeting with such dangerous men like Victor Boot. They've never been sure if they return alive. I said, wow, now please explain me. If these agents, who maximum getting what, $150K a year, paying to their stooges $8 million for one case, I don't buy it. Unfortunately, it goes, that's how the America was ruined, because this purely embezzlement of taxpayer money. So my case is demonstration, you know, clear-cut example.
Oh. Listen,
You invest money into Hollywood, create movie.
Yeah.
You demonize me. You create this, you know, legend out of me. Now, this brand worth, I don't know, how many millions?
Well, you're the merchant of death.
Correct.
You're one of the most dangerous men in the
world.
You're one of the most dangerous men in the world.
Like they say in Africa, nothing can take off a lens without my personal permission. So, wow, you know, I was really enjoying
it. I looked up the number today because I was studying your case, and I started to look at it from a comparative standpoint. Last year, the United States companies like Raytheon and them essentially distributed throughout the world somewhere between $800 billion to almost $1 trillion in arms all over the world.
Well, basically...
So When I give you that number and they say you're the one who's spreading arms all over the world, what do you think?
Well, it's typical. Look, even in the Saul Alinsky book, you know, the radical, what they call it, Bible of radical.
Yeah.
It's written if you want to, you know, blame your, you know, enemy, blame on what you are doing.
Yes.
So this was exactly what's happened in this case. Because even on the trial, the judge admitted it several times.
I heard that. Yes, she said that.
There is no any evidence of my arms selling. Right. So if I was the biggest arms dealer in the world, why on earth government never brought a single case proving that I was selling something?
And the point is, there's nothing wrong with selling weapons.
Correct.
Right? The best at selling weapons anywhere in the world is the United States.
Correct. And especially now, look what they're doing. It's fantastic. Look, they're recycling because the, you know, the military industrial complex, by the way, the most dangerous to the American democracy, accordingly, the President Eisenhower.
Right.
You know, what they're doing, they're now trying to recycle old-style weaponry.
So what it really comes down to is not whether you're selling weapons, it's who you're selling them to.
It's not
even if you're selling them to somebody that the United States or whatever other country, Russia even to a certain extent, if you're selling them to a country that they like, then it's okay. If you're selling them to a country they don't like, then you are an arms dealer.
We're coming to...
And a dangerous person.
Famous, you know, Reagan saying, he is the son of a bitch, but he is our son of a bitch.
Exactly.
So if you happen to be on this category, but now there is a dilemma. How you say in a you know, Spanish, you know, it's dangerous to be, you know, friends with a... it's dangerous to be enemy of United States, but 100 times more dangerous to be the friend.
Yes, yes.
So
yes.
Here we never
Kissinger
know.
Said
Kissinger.
That. Yes.
So you never know whether it's a blessing or curse when you in United States in this kind of the, you know, especially with you personally. And I happen to be the first Russian to whom State Department decided to make boy for whipping, you know,
yes,
as a sample. And one day...
you were the first bad Russian.
Bad Russian, out, yeah. like demonized over the world. And their position was he have to serve to last second of his sentence to be as an example to other Russians who refuse to cooperate with us when we arrest them. And after me, think of this. They arrested more than 56 Russian in said countries, despite United States and Russia had a special cooperation agreement where law enforcement, if they have any claim, can go to Russian side. And it was even a successful example when they use it.
Yes.
They arrested one Indian man on the attempt to, you know, like conspiracy to sell, you know, ground to air missiles, you know. And after this, apparently, they never used this. They never complained to Russians that they have any problem with me. Then another question. Why I was arrested by DA, not by CA. Apparently,
that's right.
CA refused to take my case because it was nothing big, nothing burger.
Yeah.
You know, and they call the specialist on the dirty tricks and jobs DA, especially this international...
Yeah, that's interesting. That you were arrested by the Drug Enforcement Agency, but you were not selling drugs.
Never.
You're not a drug guy, you're a weapons guy.
Well, the only so-called nexus was that these guys during the meeting said, oh, by the way, we're from Colombia, you know, we're selling
drugs. Oh, I see, exactly. Yeah, if you want to create a story about a bad guy associated with Colombian drug dealers.
Correct. And this is a magic clue. How you get guy committed to the United States? You first, you know, blame...
Say he's a terrorist or say he's a drug dealer.
He is. No, it's not enough to get you a strong sentence. They need that you are trying to kill Americans, that you're trying to kill Americans' military personnel in third countries, at least. And then the proceeds of this would be the drug money. This is a fantastic recipe
to
arrest almost anybody in this
planet. And the only reason they were able to say that you wanted to kill Americans was because one of the informants who was pretending to be a Colombian drug lord who was talking to you was literally told to say that, so he blurted it out. He kept saying, and I want to kill Americans with your planes. And you were like, you were looking at... I saw the video of you looking at him like,
Yeah, whatever, dude.
Whatever. Just, you know, buy my plates and do whatever you want. It's not my effing business what you do with them.
And then, but then they said you had planned to kill Americans all along.
Well, because it's conspiracy charges. Accordingly, American.
Even the judge said it was BS.
Yeah, but you see what Jess says? Unfortunately, I'm, you know, obliged by minimum sentencing rule to give him 25 years.
So you spent how much time in prison?
Well, I spent in total 14 years and 9 months. Since my date of arrest, from which 12 years...
In New York?
In the United States. No, I went to the CMU at USP Marion, which is a step-down program for the, basically, either Guantanamo or the...
But it's maximum security.
Or the most secure place, which is an administrative maximum from the Florence, Colorado.
What was that like?
It's like jail within the jail, maximum 45 people. When I arrived there, majority were being, you know, the Muslim terrorists, Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood.
This was 2000 and...
Wahhabis, 11, 12.
2011.
Yeah, well, and it's when, you know, the warden of that USP came to me, how you feel here? How you like it? I said, well, I feel myself in Saudi Arabia. Why? Because, look... Morning, there is at least 3 or 4 alternative calls for prayer in Arabic. Because
you're some Russian dude.
Yeah, some Russian dude. Nobody was there Russian. I never had the chance to speak Russian during all this time.
What was it like when you started? Have you watched the movie, the Nicolas Cage movie?
Of course, when it was even published. Because on the first version of it, when you... I still remember I bought this DVD.
Yeah.
And on the... you know, when you go, you know, like titles, it was my picture where they put, okay, this movie based on the story of Victor Boot, the most dangerous black
man in the world.
Man in the world.
The merchant of death. Well, are you the merchant of death? Are you the most dangerous man in the world?
I think I'm...
What does your wife say?
Well, you better ask her herself. I rather will be the merchant of the good jokes or something else, you know, than the...
The media has a way of running with things, and they don't even bother to ask. They just... Somebody gives them a line, and they repeat it, you
Well,
know?
They're going to bring this to the absurd level, and basically it will backfire them. Yeah. Because what's happening recently, if you try to brainwash the population, it's like happened now with these attempts to basically sanitize Western world from any sources alternative. There is no RT, there is no Sputnik, there is no Chinese, there is no Press TV. No. What's happened actually, they try to sanitize. It's happened like this. Drug-resistant bacteria in the hospitals. Mm. They're becoming more and more stronger. Population, not stupid. And Americans, either, when they feel you can't cheat them with what you're doing. If you let the Russian media to be present, they would say, propaganda, somewhat to play with. But now, everybody start doing their own research.
Yeah.
And internet allows, especially now, classical TV lost its influence, correct?
Legacy television.
It's gone. It's like dinosaur.
Yeah, you remember, you used to watch me probably when you were in the United States.
On CNN and on Fox News.
Yes, I was there. I was a part of that.
And basically, who is now watching CNN?
Nobody.
It's what do you call it?
80-year-olds.
In a nursing home.
Exactly. And in people in rocking chairs.
Yeah, right. That's it. So those who are forced to watch it because either you are in a nursing house, you can't escape, you're elderly enough, you know, you're just there, and then you're in the jail. Why? Look what the commercial they're running in CNN in America is basically all supply for elderly and medicine.
And by the way, I'll tell you something right now, and you probably know this. I will tell you right now, we're doing this show right now. We're live. We're being seen by 10 to 20 million people all over the world. We're on RT. And do you see any scripts? Do you see anything here from the Kremlin? Do you see any notes?
Wait. Call our babysitter, Kendler, who will tell us. You see, here, you're going to tell
us. Did somebody tell you what you had to say?
Oh, yeah, it's constant, the noise in my ear.
Met you 5 minutes ago when you walked in the door. We sat down and we just started talking. And now we're talking about whatever comes to our minds. And this is what true communication is supposed to be. There's no rules here, right?
There is no rules. Basically, you know that basically right now Russia is the most free place in the earth.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Because sometimes we completely said, hey, we need to restrain because it's become obvious. But fortunately, our president says, look, we already have been in this, where we try to put censorship almost on everything and where we end up.
Exactly.
So when you have a freedom to express your opinion, And believe me, if you go to the Russian media now or social, you know, media especially, you look so much critics, so much opinion, so much, I mean, you would not believe how vast it is.
Yeah.
But one thing, because there is no censorship, and basically it's calm, of course. Something who pushing the terrorism, who pushing the racial hate speech, who pushing the pedophilia, you know, or propaganda of LGBT plus whatever, you know, how many pluses there, Q, whatever.
You can be gay in Russia. There's nothing there. I see gay people in Russia all the time. But what Russia says is, you can't make my children celebrate Gay Pride Month.
Well, at least
that's,
there is
that's
no,
all they're saying. You can't force
but,
it. You
by
can't.
The way, you remember the story when they finally, once in 90s, they forced the Russia to do the gay parade in Moscow.
No.
And the mayor of that time, Lushkov, said, okay, you want the gay parade? Okay, cool, you have it. And he gave them the date, which was happened to be the 2nd of August. And 2nd of August, it's a national day when all veterans and the soldiers of airborne troops are celebrating it. So this gay parade became kind of the beating up. And I personally saw it, like when they tried to run to police, police beat them.
Right.
When they run inside the houses, you know, or inside the yards of the buildings.
You know,
and I saw the elderly woman with her small, you know, bag try to beat them and said, you bastards.
And it's not right. No one, violence is not good against anybody, and it should never be used. But here's the point. I'm Hispanic. In the United States, we have this thing called Hispanic Heritage Month. Why? Why don't we just have American Heritage Month? Why don't we have Black History Month?
Well,
why don't we have Gay Pride Month?
Rick,
you should celebrate the country, not individuals.
But this is how you divide and rule. When you start with seeing the one society, divide them in the groups, you know? In America, you have the Black, you know, Black celebration or the memorial in the January. Then you get Hispanic, then you get LGBT, then you get, you know, Native, you know,
people. Native American, and then
it's all
Irish American,
correct?
Then, right.
So
why?
Well,
we should just be Americans.
Correct.
Here in this country, everybody celebrates Russia. They don't celebrate Tajikistan's Russia or this kind of Russian or that.
Though, look, we are multi-ethnic and multi-confessional country.
No question.
Look, in Moscow alone, we're having about 2 million Muslims. They have the mosque. They're free to practice their, you know, celebrate their holidays. And, you know, in many regions, the Muslims and Russian kind of they mix up like in Tatarstan.
Yeah.
By the way, in Moscow...
And they have the best food.
Correct. In Moscow, there is more Tatars than they are living in capital of Tatarstan, traditionally.
Wow.
You know, but it doesn't mean we have to, you know, kind of split it. But we all united to feel that we have one country.
I agree with
we're
you, sir.
We're sharing the same mentality and we're enjoying diversity. But this diversity is not trying to damage your freedom, your rights. It's not all over you. It's not imposing on you. You like, please, you share.
Do you want to be gay? Be gay. You want to be celebrated Tatars?
Unfortunately, I think, Rick, we're living in an era when we, right before our, as we speak, you know, the democracy in the West are dying and basically on the life support. I'm not sure if the next several years there is any democratic country will be left in Europe. We still, you know, have to see what's going to happen in America.
Mm.
Because when you see more the things when you far off it, you know, like from outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whatever discourse happening in American society, especially Trump, he want to have a third term. And the problem is, it's like a bug. The Zelensky example, so attractive.
Yeah.
You know, you get all what? Money you want.
Yes.
You are star reception all over the world when you travel. You now, you know, being kissed on all, or, you know, whenever you want.
You get to be best friends with...
Best friends with everybody. And first of all, your term is expired, but you're still there running the country. You're getting filthy rich because everybody's sending you money and you're giving them kickbacks. You're providing them, you know, anything they want, kids, drugs, you know, cash in the bags. So that's kind of the, you know, really, really example for all these leaders who are thinking twice, hey, why I need to lose my election? I'm sure that the president of France, Macron, sitting in his, Champs-Élysées palace and thinking, how I can stay on power? I can't win the election because my rating below the, any normal level.
Yeah, their polls numbers are
beyond 20% or whatever.
Starmer was 12.
What is the solution? He need to quit and admit it? You think he gonna admit? No, he gonna create a scenario where they declare war to Russia, declare the martial law, and remain in the power.
You said to Tucker something. I was watching you with Tucker, and you said something to him. You said, I know that Europe has, within the last 6 months, come up with a brand new strategy, and the strategy is this. We cannot beat Russia on the battlefield, so correct. We will beat them by bombing Russian civilians. You said that
to him. Correct. Well, that's what we're seeing. Look at every your newscasts. There is a kind of documented cases when the Ukrainian army, Ukrainians, using, by the way, American intelligence, British intelligence, attacking the civilians, Russians, and it's documented because I'm often go for this public war crime tribunal for Ukrainian Nazis, which is a public organization who are documenting these cases.
I was in Lugansk. I saw I went to the school that was shot. I reported from there.
And so what is the idea? They said, look, okay, we can't kill 50,000 Russian soldiers. So because they monetize the system, right now for in Ukrainian army, you have the score system. You need to kill people. And if you attack the, for instance, civilian car, you can claim, oh, there is military was there. If you attack the bus, you said, oh, one military was inside. They need just to have enough points.
So they say Wildberries, which is like Russia's answer to what we have at Amazon warehouses in the United States. They're saying that's a military installation. It's not.
Well, correct, because, look, there was no secondary detonation like when the Russia hit the Ukrainian new Pochta. In many Ukrainian cities, often there is a secondary detonation or they're claiming Russian attack, innocent commercial center, right? But then secondary detonation goes for several days.
But here's the point, Victor. Let's suppose the Yemenis, let's suppose any country in the world attacked another country's school, university, railroad, apartment buildings, e-commerce centers, wouldn't that be called terrorism?
Well, exactly. But this is now, look, if you run out of the option of the battlefield, so the Ukrainians now have got only one product for sale, and it's not grain.
Yeah.
It's not their, production. Despite when the Soviet Union collapsed and Ukraine became independent, 40% of industrial potential, almost 50% of high-tech production was in Ukraine. It was a country with a 50 plus million population, equal of this GDP output to France.
Today it's about 24 million.
It was one country who was able to produce aircraft engine and aircraft itself. It was unique.
Is that why NATO wanted to take it over?
Well, not only this, NATO needed a kind of the launch pad to attack the Russia. Think of this.
But they already had Estonia, they had Latvia, they had Lithuania.
Isn't that enough? Not enough, because, look, the globalists openly claiming that Russia always standing in their, on their way to global control and manipulation. So, and Russia already several times in the history destroyed their plan, whether it was Napoleon invasion, Hitler, because the if you look in the historical roots of all this, it was always globalists who said, look, we need to control the globe, and Russia is there too big for them to exist, having too many, resources, why they can't control it. So this time they bought the European elite, promising them, hey, we've got a plan. We're going to, using the Ukrainians to fight the Russians, we not need to, send our sons for these battlefields. Let the Ukrainian to fight till the last Ukrainian, like Lindsey Graham used to say, this is the best investment. We're not sending our guys.
Let me stop you for a minute, because I want to show you something, and I want to show our viewers something. Lindsey Graham just passed away. Lindsey Graham was a man who was a merchant of death, correct, truly was responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people all over the world. There was not a single war that he did not like. He was very much tied to arms dealers, arms suppliers. They fed him, they gave him money, they kept him in office all of his life. Here is his funeral procession. Watch.
A beloved friend, a devoted brother, a respected statesman who left us much too soon.
He was on a trip, what turned out to be his last trip, trying to broker peace.
I'm confident, as are you, that there will never be another Lindsey Graham.
I remember Lindsey Graham as a man who loved people.
Was he in Ukraine trying to broker peace, as we just heard?
Well, I think he went there to collect his, little honorarium, paycheck for mm-hmm. what he's doing for Ukraine, because he is one of the, warmonger who got...
He really was. I mean...
He really was.
We're not exaggerating.
Supporting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember every conflict he was pushing, whether it was Iraq, Afghanistan, operation in Libya, anyway...
Killing the Gazans, killing Palestinians.
But the accordingly information I've got, so Ukrainians actually poisoned him. And this was made, first of all, to blame Russia. Uh-huh. Second, to got occasion to come to his funeral and push this, sanction from hell bill of his making to the reality.
Wait. So let's back this up a little bit. You're here on the air saying that you have sources that lead you to believe or have told you that the Ukrainians were responsible for his death.
Correct. And they poisoned him with a special kind of the natural poison, which very difficult to detect.
Which turns into a cardiac arrest?
Correct.
Because he died of essentially
atherosclerosis. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that they just, feed them some herbal tea when he comes back to America. Here you are, He's expired.
And why would they want to do that?
Well, first of all, look, the Zelensky...
He was their friend.
Yeah, but he wasn't in... Ukraine was in the back burner, for America was busy with Iran, so all the resources went there. So Zelensky and his clique was fighting how to keep attention on them. That's why they tried to launch massive attack on Russia, show that they are winning, try to say, we cut the supply route to Crimea, so Crimeans will die from hunger.
Zelensky's a good showman. He really does understand how to get attention.
Correct.
He's good at it, better than the Russians.
Better than the Russians, but think of this, apart of the being good showman, or only to create propaganda effect, you need also to bring yourself to reality on the battlefield. The difference between showman and the real, leader of the country, you need to think about your future. You need to think what kind of consequences are, good for your country or bad for your country. And when you decide that you will sacrifice your country, destroy the economy, destroy the demography, destroy the future, for what? For personal enrichment? Because he has become a maybe unique factor for the past 100 or 200 years, how you embezzle organized crime, or it's not only organized crime on embezzling money, money laundering. And think of this, anything in America, political scandals for past, 15 years are connected to Ukraine.
Yeah.
Correct? Starting from the election, we know that Ukraine has been always supporting the Democrats. There is a trail when the Ukrainian government, since what?
Obama was where it really got hot and heavy. Well, you go back and you listen to the tape with Victoria Nuland essentially saying, we are going to create a coup in Ukraine. We're going to take over the country. These are the people we want in power. We want this guy here. We want that guy there. I mean, imagine if Russia or imagine if China went to, Canada
and
did the same thing and just took, we're going to take over Canada and we're going to make sure Canada is anti-U.S.
and
pro-China.
And then we put there our interceptors, our military bases.
Exactly.
Prepare from them and create the history where they're going to go and fight. I say better.
The United States would not stand for that.
Correct. Well, think of this. It's maybe not Canada. Use the Texas example.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own town or Texas accent.
Yeah.
So you can say, okay, this now the Texan language. And then you're going to impose to say, no, we have to rewrite our history. We've been, you know, Texan from get-go. We've been the first one to arrive in America. Actually, we invented all the things. You know, we dig the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
We invented all the tacos and the, you know, burritos.
Yeah.
And then you said, well, now it's legal to speak English.
Yep.
Okay. Then you will say, well, despite everybody speaks English, no.
You have to speak English with a Texan accent.
And then think that the Russia or China decided to create a coup in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, when they're independent, and then you know you're gonna bring military bases. So what the United States will do?
They would not allow that.
Correct.
So, that's what Mr. Putin did. Let's go back to something, Mr. Putin. I said at the beginning of this newscast. When I was explaining to people how Russia has transformed itself into a very different place than what it was from the Soviet Union and also that brief period during the 1990s, and I said that, and I think it was Mr. Putin, you can correct me if I'm wrong, there may have been others involved, who literally decided we were going to give everything to the West and open our arms, but now, you know what, enough. We're going to close it and we're going to start kicking out all these oligarchs who've been taking advantage of Russia, who've been in bed with the West. Am I right,
well,
the way I'm stating
right,
that?
But there is a certain, you know, details I want to share with you. First of all, every reform when the Soviet Union collapsed after the Gorbachev and Yeltsin came to power, he've got a big team arriving from United States, so-called advisors.
Yes.
And those advisors been advising how to start the market economy. In fact, all the reforms have been, whether to pillage, you know, whatever left from Soviet Union, left a lot.
And there's a lot here.
Correct. Then they do privatization, which has become basically robbery at the daylight, when for peanuts, you end up to own a huge, for instance, oil company, or huge metallurgical, you know,
timber,
right. Doesn't matter what.
Russia has the most of almost everything.
Correct. And think of this, the transition when the socialist system collapsed and these advisors designed the plan how to privatize. Of course, they end up with the most sweetest, you know,
deals.
Spouse. And they created oligarchs who said, hey.
It was like this for me and this
no,
for you.
No, what they said, look, they said, okay, it's literally like guys happen just to pass by and there is apparently auction, come and buy. Well, come, there is an oil company for sale, for instance, like you could show up. So how are we going to do it? Yeah, it's $20 million. Dollar, where you get $20 million? There is no $200 in his pocket this time. Well, there is a bank who lends you $20 million, but $20 million, this company make a profit in one day.
Yes.
What is a...
So the Russian guy who was buying the company was really being fed the money by some Westerner or
correct.
Some other country?
This was an auction because you walk in, there is a representative, oh, you need money, sign up, $20 million, it's yours.
So these oligarchs who suddenly became, by the way, oligarch is just a name made up in the West. In America, they're billionaires, but somehow because here they're Russians, they're called oligarchs. And I get that. Just like a bad government you don't like is a regime, but a good one is a government, and one guy's a patriot and the other guy's a terrorist. I get all that. But regardless, we'll just call them oligarchs for the sake of argument. A lot of these oligarchs who suddenly became billionaires overnight were literally being stooges working for the West.
Well, yes, because...
Not all of them, I'm sure.
Yeah, not all of them. And when the President Putin became a president, so he gathered them all and said, okay, there is a new rules now, you know, whether you pay taxes.
Yeah, because they weren't paying any taxes.
Yeah, because deal was very simple. For instance, how the UCAS deal started. Look, when the government looked to say to the UCAS, look, you can't sell to your own offshore, you know, subsidiary the oil, crude, you know, getting there because your cost is $15, you're adding $1 to this, you're selling to your subsidiary in Cyprus, and then this subsidiary sell this at $50-$60. You are in violation of the law. You need to pay taxes. They said, heck no, we will not. And then when especially they decided to buy out their way through the politics, then again, they've been told, hey, guys, you've got money, but you cannot invest into political campaigns. Some of them do not want to listen to this recommendation. So, well, government said, okay, fine. And they make a sample with the UCOS by arresting.
Let me just stop you for a minute. He made it so they couldn't buy political influence.
Well, because they've been already there.
Which is something, by the only reason I'm saying this, I'm from America, where everybody buys political influence.
Correct. Look, but that time, Soros already was financing many of our academicians, teachers, influencing and pushing all these NGOs, was present all over the Russia. At the same time, then oligarchs, when they've got money, or billionaires, they decided, well, we need to have our deputies in the State Duma. Let's finance their campaign of election.
They needed their Lindsey Grahams.
Let's buy the, media. They start buying TV channels. They're creating new TV channels. They're pushing the propaganda, anti-Russian, anti-president, anti-this. Of course, you need to, in certain level, you understand now this is a threat to the future of this country. So when the president decided, no, we kick out the Soros Foundation, we kick out other NGOs who've been acting against, interest of Russian people, first of all, and then against our national security.
And we kick out the people who are taking bribes from them.
Correct. And now
the Russians.
Then they put strict rules for the billionaires. So you can't just, buy your influence. You can't, get your dummies or your puppets in the government or in the legislature. And it happens.
And you have to pay taxes.
And you have to pay taxes.
I met with one, and I'm not going to mention his name, but I've met with several very powerful, wealthy business people in Russia. And one of them sat me down and he said, "Do you want to see what I pay in taxes? Look." And he literally showed me. It was crazy. Nobody in America pays that kind of money in taxes. In America, most billionaires barely pay any money in taxes. Well, and if they do, it's maybe half of 1%.
But this is the difference because here, especially how it's happened, there was a reform, I guess it was early 2000, but they decided, look, we've got a progressive scale of taxing for the profits or income person.
Right.
Then they reduce it to flat rate. And when they reduce it to flat rate, they get 4 or 5 times more taxes paid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then the people can legally pay taxes, buy whatever they want, private jets, any property, even,
And the tax base in Russia is anywhere between 14 to like 18%,
but the problem is,
right?
Yeah.
In America, it's 35%.
Correct. And now it's a little bit bigger, but still, we have a more, bigger taxation on the corporate activities.
So the more you make, the more you pay.
So this is a little bit different. So the idea was, since the American design during privatization, all this, what they did, they actually told to this, freshly created nouveau-riche, class, okay, look, by the way, London, Miami, New York is way better for you. Why you not come and buy property there? So they create a huge, not only, migration of those people who have money, but this become a pump who's sucking, investment out of Russia.
When Mr. Putin kicked a lot of these people who didn't pay taxes and did the things that you were just describing, most of them went to London, Israel,
correct,
and several other countries.
America was very popular, unless... and then the Putin told those people, hey, Russia only a safe place for you. Return before it's not too late. Bring your capital back.
Right.
Those who listened to him, basically now, doing very well. Those who said, finally West took all their money.
Yes.
They're now crying there. Oh, sorry, we can't have anything. Why you don't let us use? We invested so much in property in UK. We bought the football club. We bought this. Well, guys.
You're talking about Abramowitz. Yeah.
Well, we've been warning you, Don't invest there.
So in the end, here's what I think. And you tell me again if I'm full of crap. The reason Putin has an 80% approval rating in the most recent polls, which, by the way, are done by Germans, not by Russians, is because the people recognize what you just said and they back him. They think, or they believe, that Putin was responsible for making Russia a more stable place and a more pro-Russia place during the 1990s.
Well,
that he kind of saved them from that crack that was going on back
that
then.
Was a complete disaster. Basically, we've been on the path to the self, suicidal path. Would be no Russia.
Yeah.
Why? Because, first of all, the Yeltsin era created so much that the Moscow do not control the regions. So they've been very close to start declaring independent enclaves or even countries. We know that the Caucasus and Chechnya, there was a war,
yeah.
and they declared their sovereignty. And you remember when Putin was giving an interview to Oliver Stone for his documentary.
Yes,
he said, look,
I watched it.
He called Bush and said, you know, why you're supporting the Chechen, you know, terrorists? And said, well, let me, you know, sort it out. And then he received the famous facts where they said it's, you know, a matter of national security of the United States and, you know, they would not discuss it.
Yes, yes.
So think of this. We've been very close to lose the country. Then for all our population, because we've been first, I would say, you know, frustrated with the communist system.
Yeah.
Then we've got to capitalism. We're supposed to be happy, but what we saw
was crony capitalism.
It's not crony. It was a kind of the chaos.
Yeah.
And people, look, when these so-called advisors came from the United States and advised what kind of the shock therapy to do with the Russian economy, think of this. In a period of like 9 months, we lost 40% of our income and our GDP. Majority of the factories, because they've been in the planned Soviet socialist system, economy was just declared independent or privatized. Nobody knows where we supply our production. The factories never been in charge to sell their
So production. It's all about, you're saying they were here to rip you off.
Correct. And then population, because in Soviet Union, at least average population was a decent, you know, level of life and income.
Yeah.
They have their, you know, savings, like my parents got the savings, maybe not much, but was enough to buy a car or a house. And then everything in one day disappeared. You go to the store, there is nothing to buy. And then when they said, okay, you can buy something, prices becoming like changing every day three times.
Right, it's inflation.
Then they allowed to sell the anything like in a flea market all over the place. This center of Moscow, I remember very well. If you in evening you're going or you're driving through, you have a trash up to your knee.
Ugh.
Because everywhere everybody was selling cigarettes.
Crime
was rampant.
Yeah.
The mafia apparently started to go and
sounds like London.
Worse, but it's quickly like, over.
I mean, London now.
Yeah, London now.
What an irony, huh?
What is
that
irony?
There are cities now. I was talking to an agent the other day. I was talking to a gentleman from Berlin. He's in the Bundestag. I was interviewing on my show, and he said, you know, there are parts of Berlin where you can't walk through the cities.
Well,
he describes it the way you just described what Moscow was in the 1990s.
Well, I surprised. Once I've been in Europe, and I know that, for instance, Luxembourg was a kind of the quiet and nice and clean place. And right now, you know, somebody was in a you know, show telling that he is right in the Luxembourg and look what's happening down. There is a drug cartels, you know, fighting for their turf. It's not safe anymore in the Luxembourg.
Luxembourg.
Yeah.
So you believe that Mr. Putin did do what people in this country seemingly rightfully give him credit for.
Well,
he's not a perfect man. He makes mistakes.
But let's put it.
You're part of the opposition.
Correct. Let's put very straightforward. First of all, Putin earned the respect and the trust of the people. He was the first politician who came and said, hey, we're going to do it. And then in you know, several months, it was delivered.
Yeah.
Then he said, hey, we're going to do it. And then, you know, sure enough, this was done. So very slowly, population started believing him. Because this guy, every time he says something,
he does it.
And then when he said, look, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. This is how he earned not only population report, but everybody else, including my one. Initially, well, who he is?
Yeah, who is this guy?
Yeah, right. Again, exactly. Replacing this drunk.
The guy, was he
know,
mayor
Yeltsin,
of St. Petersburg?
Drunk Yeltsin.
Yeah.
He is a kind of the, you know, not looking big enough to be a president, not imposing figure. But apparently he did in the most strongest moment, especially during the Chechen conflict in Chechnya, where like, you know, it was so hard even to assemble enough combat ready troops to finish it. You know, he did it. He disciplined the local governments. He made sure there is no crime on the streets.
And he finally was the guy who told NATO enough. And he said, if you continue what you're doing in Ukraine, we will stop you. We will go in. He calls it the special operation, but really it was...
Well, he warned the West, like, what, 7 years before the coup in the Munich, you know, Conference of Security.
2014.
No, 27.
Wow.
He was speaking in Munich.
Well, that's right.
He was warning. He said, if this world order, where there is only one boss and he trying to boss everybody around, are not fit will not, you know, continue. And this is how it will happen. Everybody was thinking, oh, what he's talking about, you know? What he's talking. And then from there on, Russia really, you know, get not only from knees, but, you know, go back to its normal position to be a...
Respected
country.
Superpower.
And look, we only one in this planet who able to destroy America several times as America can destroy us.
Yeah, you mean Russia has more nuclear warheads than any country in the world, including the United States.
Yeah, and now look at this. So the Europe deciding they're going to war in Russia by, you know, using Ukraine because they're thinking Russia will never cross this limit of the conventional to the nuclear, you know. But what they are making a huge mistake.
Yes.
Because even in our military, you know, strategy, you know, it's written if there is any attack against us, if this has kind of the strategic, you know, level of this attack for us, we might and we can use the nuclear.
But wait, let me stop you. You're being attacked right now by Europe. Europe is attacking Russia.
If it's me,
right now.
Look, if it's me.
Yeah.
But hopefully, I'm not there to give the
orders.
You're
not Putin, and you're not the president.
I would be already used the nukes several times.
Seriously?
To stop it. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what that would start. I mean, we're talking about World War III, Victor.
Huh? Yeah, eventually, yes, this is only reason. But if you think, we're not talking about big stuff, but I would not even hit Ukraine because Ukraine has nothing to do. It's only territory.
They're just a proxy. They're just being used by the Russians.
We can not use the nukes. Let's use the Oreshnik, which is close to the nukes, but not really nukes.
And hit what? Brussels?
No, Brussels.
London?
Well, maybe if we hit
Poland.
The Brussels. No, listen, if we hit the Brussels, we need then to get so much money paid us because we destroyed this bureaucracy and liberated European Union from the... I guess...
If you hit Brussels, everybody in Europe will thank you.
Yeah, so please give your, you know, proposal, how much you pay us.
You're not a fan of Ursula von der Leyen?
Oh, boy, you know, don't touch it, please. You know, I will lose my temper and say something which is not good for
She's such a kind, noble, small woman.
Yeah, so the idea is to hit somewhere just to show, especially to the French and British.
Yeah.
Look, you're thinking you're going to, you know, make a war against us using the Ukraine like a proxy. Then we show, because you declare they have the Ukrainian factory in your territory. Mm. Accordingly, all international law, we're going to hit it.
And just to be clear, so our viewers don't think you're a crazy man, there is ample evidence that the Wildberries, the Crimean Bridge, the apartment buildings in Moscow, the petroleum centers in St. Petersburg, these are all attacks using sophisticated weaponry that was provided by, managed by, guided by Europeans.
Not only Europeans,
so
Americans.
So it's Europe attacking Russia.
Not only Europe, America.
Americans,
without
yes.
American
My
Starlink,
country. My country.
Without intelligence from the Pentagon, Ukraine cannot sustain combat operation more than a couple hours.
Yeah.
If tomorrow Trump really wants to stop this war, he calls the Musk to set cut off Ukrainians, and he called the Pentagon to set stop sharing intelligence.
So blaming Ukrainians for being at war with Russia is like blaming a gun for firing somebody.
Yeah,
it's the person who pressed the
trigger,
bullet.
Correct.
Exactly, pulling the
and
trigger.
And now the trigger being pulled by American fingers and European fingers together.
And yet Mr. Putin is showing a lot of restraint.
Well, because look, we don't know all the full picture like he knows, right? So he's still trying to wait that there is a healthy part of elites in the West who don't want to lose their wealth, who don't want to see their country go to the, you know, to trash,
yeah,
like it's happening right now in many European capitals. He expecting that they're going to finally push or take over the power there and, you know, come to the negotiation table before it's too late.
What's really happening inside of Russia, though? Who is in his ear? If you look at the power structure, you know, whether it's Lavrov or yourself or Mr. Slutsky and others in the Duma or people who are in his head, what is the conversation like there, you think? What are they saying
I'm not,
to him? Is it like the conversation you and I are having right now?
I don't know.
Do we fight back? Do we attack Poland after all they're sending all their weapons into Ukraine and killing our people?
Look, I only can make a suggestion because I'm not, you know, really aware of really what's going on.
You're not in those meetings. Right?
I'm not in those meetings, to be honest. But I might suggest that he's getting information from different sources and pretty much exact one. So now we're looking that Russia might be very slow to prepare or to start something, but we will start doing something. Then it shows the effect. Look, we've been warning the West, hey, don't touch the maritime, navigation in Black Sea.
But they Ukrainians... sunk 100 ships, including 27 naval carriers of Russia.
Correct. Correct.
So now Russia's sinking everything that comes into the Black Sea.
Correct.
And now Russia has done in the Black Sea what the Iranians have done in the Strait of Hormuz.
Correct. So we basically shut down the sea supply, which was most efficient supply of the ammunition, weaponry, whatever Ukraine
needs. But also
need.
Grain? And also...
Well, there is no export of grain, no export of the metals, no export of the ore. So it's definitely big hit on the economy.
Yes.
Now, Ukraine was trying to create a fuel crisis. Well, we see that almost 10 days ago, it's basically solved by our government efforts. There is available fuel almost everywhere. There is no waiting anymore.
Yeah, I saw they're hitting all the gas stations.
Yeah.
They're...
Now, the of course, the border area where they can reach using, by the way, Americans' Hornet drones, they're really hunting the civilians, as we discussed with you. But you almost daily, provide the briefing on your maps when you're showing how the Russian army are moving.
Yeah.
So we are very close to have
You watch this show?
Of course.
You watch the Sanchez effect?
Yeah, well, not every day, but at least, sometimes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Idea is, so you're giving at least honest, representation of the facts.
Yes.
Of course, your opinion. But idea is Ukrainians are very close to collapse, despite they make their main, they put their bet on the drones technology. But now, what if the Russian now come back with some efficient means to counter these drones? Then there is nobody in the battlefield to defend it.
Because so you think it's just a matter of time before the Russians take Kramatorsk, Slovyansk,
well,
and that region?
Well, it's not only this, because, look, once the Ukraine...
And we're down to 2 minutes, by the way. I'm being told that we talk too much.
The idea is, because you know what's happening with the human factor in Ukraine, there is not enough...
People.
Yeah. There is not enough...
They've all left. You said they had 50 million people there. They're now down to 21 million or so.
Yeah, can't get enough cannon meat, so they have to hunt people.
Yeah.
So
it's terrible.
Basically, think of this.
Forced mobilization.
Post-mobilization. Russia have got enough reserves. If they start, really breaking these, defense, whatever the Ukrainians were building for 10 years, especially... In Kramatorsk, Slavyansk, there is nothing there behind.
Yes.
Till the...
So once they take that area of the Donbass,
correct,
and then if they're
collapse.
Able to take as well as...
It's collapse.
Yeah, Zaporizhia.
And whether that the solution for France and UK, Germany to declare the war to Russia, then we immediately will use what we consider appropriate in this... Facts.
So you're saying if that happens and this thing breaks in the next couple of months, who knows? It could be 6 months, it could be 2 months, but something is... Russia seems to be breaking in Donbass, and that's every expert I talk to, every military expert tells me the same thing. What will the Europeans do? Will they say, okay, we lost, we tried, but we lost? Or will they just...
Well, they invested too heavily. They tried to create scenario how they can get at least Poland or Romania involved, or maybe throw the Baltic to fight till the last, Ukrainians.
You think they'll create another Ukraine?
They create, especially the Poland. I hope that the Polish will be more smart to not let themselves into this.
Believe it or not, you and I have now been speaking for an hour. We could probably go for another hour. There must be a Cuban in you or something, because we're just sitting here there's no rum, but we're doing a lot of talking. You've been so gracious with your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Victor.
Thank you.
It really has
Thank
been
you.
A wonderful experience. Your story is amazing. I mean, you are legendary, and people know you all over the world. And yet, when I sit here and talk to you, you're just like a regular guy. I mean, I feel like I'm in America just talking to one of my...
Well, I spent so much in America, so it was for me a good to learn the real American
You know
character.
The culture.
Yeah. Yeah, to know that they are also, there is affinity.
You talk like an American.
Well, you spend so much time,
Once again, thank you so much.
Thank
it's really a delight to have you here, and thank you so much for joining us. And that's it
for us. We're going to try and wrap up real quick, but thank you. Remember that you can find this, and you'll see much of this conversation now. It'll be on YouTube, and it'll be on all the socials out there, certainly on X, as we also see. And then, of course, you'll be able to see it on BitChute, which is one of my favorites. Thank you so much. Tell us what you think. If you think that what he said was crazy, let me know. I mean, it's all about sharing your opinion, and we'll be gladly, I'll be reading everything that you guys send to us anyway. And most importantly, thank you so much for letting us into your homes. We really appreciate it. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.
Thank you, and have a good day.